पारिजाताय तोत्रवेत्रहि कपाणये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृत दुहे नमः। हरे कृष्णा। वेलकम बैक टू द भगवद गीता भक्ति शास्त्री कोर्स। वी आर नाउ गोइंग टू स्टार्ट विद द 16th चैप्टर ऑफ द भगवद गीता। दिस इज दैव आसुर संपद विभाग योग, द डिवाइन एंड द डेमोनियक नेचर्स। सो प्रभुपाद गिव्स अ सिंपल ट्रांसलेशन, डिवाइन एंड डेमोनियक नेचर्स। दैव आसुर संपद विभाग योग, दैट इज द संस्कृत नेम। संपद विभाग, संपद मीन्स संपद इज रिलेटेड विद द वर्ड संपत्ति, वेल्थ। संपद मीन्स एक्चुअली this is what they consider to be the wealth. The demoniac consider demoniac qualities to be their wealth. We will see the list of demoniac and godly qualities. The ungodly, the demoniac, they think that actually the arrogance, harshness, these are their strengths. They think this is the treasure, this is the lust. They think, okay, this is good, you know, this is, I want to have this more and more so that I can enjoy. So that is demoniac, and that's what is they're considered to be wealth. So this is vibhag. You know, the divine considers certain things to be the wealth, the demoniac considers certain qualities to be the wealth, and these qualities, they become so ingrained in them that they become a part of their nature. That's why sampad vibhag. So what we consider as our wealth, we will hold it close to us, and eventually that will become a part of us, and that will become us, that will become our nature eventually. That's how the divine and demoniac natures, that's the title. Now again, this chapter is like the 15th chapter and the 14th chapter also, where Krishna speaks without any prompting from Arjuna. So Krishna is taken the thread of thought of explaining how jnana leads to bhakti based on the question that Arjuna asks in 13.1, and Krishna pursues that theme. Now in the 14th chapter, Arjuna has asked one question about how one can, three questions basically in one verse he asked. In 14.21, he asked about what are the characteristics of a person who has transcended the modes, what is the behavior of such a person, and what is the process to transcend. After that, he hasn't asked any question. So the link between 15 and 16 chapter is based on the understanding of the upside down tree. So we discussed in 13.22 that the bija is what purusha prakatistho hi. That the living entity is situated in material nature, and what makes the living entity situated? Bhunkte prakriti jan gunan, the desire to enjoy material world. Bhunkte prakriti jan gunan, and then in this tree we discuss that what waters the tree is the modes. So the tree was explicitly mentioned in the 15th chapter, but the mentality which causes that tree to sprout is the bhunkte, the desire to enjoy, and it is nourished by the three modes of material nature which were described in the 14th chapter. The 15th chapter describes the upside down tree and how one can become disentangled from it by taking shelter of Purushottama, by worshipping Purushottama. Now 16th chapter describes the upper and the lower aspects, of lower extremes of the tree. Now the tree is upside down. So urdhamulam adhashakam. So the upper part of the tree is nearer to the root, that is the Brahmaloka. Now the word Brahmaloka can sometimes mean Brahmaloka, the spiritual world. Brahma can mean spirit and Loka is the world. So then Brahmaloka refers to the spiritual world. But Brahmaloka can also refer to the abode of Brahmaji, which is also called as Satyaloka. So now here we are referring to the Brahmaloka as Satyaloka, the abode of Brahma. That is in the material world. So that is the upper extreme. And then there are the lower. Then as we go downwards, there is Svarga. And there is the human level. And below that, there are the hellish planetary systems. So when we describe it thus, this descending level. So in this descending level of hierarchy, the primary and important thing is to recognize that the divine are situated in the upper part of the tree, and the demoniac are in the lower part of the tree. So this sort of differentiation helps us understand that, you know, we have to move upward and ultimately come out of this tree and go back to the from the reflection to the reality. So in this particular verse, in the beginning, Krishna describes the divine nature. So actually the divine he describes only in three verses, and the rest of the chapter he is describing the demoniac nature. So let's look quickly at the chapter overview, and then we'll move forward. Chapter 16. So Krishna describes divine qualities in verses 1 to 3. Then after that he describes the demoniac qualities. Then divine and demoniac qualities are basically described in 1 to 9. Then 10 to 18 describes the activities of the demoniac. You know, whatever qualities we have, those qualities get reflected in the activities that we do. So the activities of the demoniac are talked about. And then after that, 19 to 22 talks about the consequences and causes of demoniac activities. What will be the result and what makes people do these demoniac activities. And then the chapter concludes with outlining of the choice that we have. Do we want to act in the divine way or the demoniac way? It gives us the choice by telling us how to, if we want to act in the divine way, how can we act in the divine way? So let's look at the first section. The first section talks about the divine qualities. Now here also Srila Prabhupada brings three verses together because the focus is on divine qualities as a group, and Krishna gives them the verses also as a group, and at the end of the third verse he says a summary which applies to all the previous three verses. So it's logical to group these three verses together. Let's look at these three verses. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Abhayam Sattva Samshuddhir Jnana Yoga Vivasthitihi Dhanam Damascha Yajnascha Swadhyayas Taparjavam Ahimsa Satyam Akrodhas Tyaga Shantirapaishunam Dayabhuteshvaloluptam Mardavam Riracapalam Teja Kshamadhriti Shaucham Adroho Natimanita Bhavanti Sampadam Daivim Abhijatasya Bharata. So Bhavanti, all this is Sampadam Daivim, all this is the Sampada, the nature, the characteristic, the wealth of the Daivi. And Abhijatasya Bharata, so those who are of the godly disposition, of the divine nature, they have these qualities from birth itself. So now of course nature is not just a matter of something internal, nature is also shaped by nurture and culture. So actually our behavior is shaped by these three things: nature, nurture and culture. Nature means how we are born with. All of us have certain tendencies, certain psychophysical characteristics, likes and dislikes, that are innate to us. That is, innate means innate not at the level of the soul, but innate at the level of the body and the mind that we have based on our previous karma. So that is nature. And then there is, our behavior is also shaped by nurture. Nurture means how we are taken care of, the values with which our parents raise us, the kind of environment which we live in while we grow up. And that, especially in the initial ages, it is just the parents. The parents create the environment. But as we move out, and even when we are the parents, nowadays there's TV, which also affects a lot. But then there is a larger culture in which we live. Culture also refers to association, includes association. So that also shapes our behavior in a significant way. So there is nature, nurture and culture. Of course, beyond that there is our free will. So all these shape our behavior, but they don't absolutely determine our behavior. We can still use our free will and choose to act differently. So the system is not fatalistic. It's analysis. Actually, it's not completely deterministic. There are choices. You know, two twins may have the identical genetic pool, especially if they are monozygotic. That means they are born from the same zygote which is split later. So they have identical genetic makeup, but still they have different behaviors. They have different mood, different dispositions, and even if their parents take care of them in similar ways, still over a period of time they grow up differently. So why is that? Because beyond nature, beyond nurture and beyond culture, we are all individuals. And as individuals we have free will. And we are souls who originally have the spiritual individuality. And now when we come to the material world, our original individuality is covered over. But still, we remain individuals. So that's why, actually speaking, our free will never goes away. Our individuality never goes away. Nature, nurture, culture shape our behavior. They don't determine our behavior. But here, when Krishna talks about these two, the divine and demoniac nature, the focus of talking these is to help us understand that this is the way, the divine nature is the way to liberation, and the demoniac nature is the way to bondage, and therefore we should choose to act according to the divine nature. Now, let's look at these qualities. Abhayam sattva samshuddhir. So, Srila Prabhupada, in his purport, actually gives concise and profound explanations of each of these qualities. Prabhupada first describes the qualities. So Prabhupada says about how to beget a child in a godly environment is known in the Vedic scriptures as Garbhadhan Samskar. So that is the way one can get a godly child. Abhijatasya. So ultimately every soul has free will, but the parents can do the best to protect the child. Now, protection is not just physical. Protection is also emotional and spiritual. And protection is emotional and spiritual means that actually at an emotional level, the child should feel cared and loved. And at a spiritual level, the child should be facilitated so that the child can make right choices throughout the life. Choices that will take one closer towards Krishna, that will help one to return to Krishna. So that is what is desired. And one such choice that the parents can make for the protection of the child, even before the birth of the child, is the Garbhadhan Samskar, where by purifying their consciousness, the parents can help to attract a pure-hearted soul towards into their womb, and thereby help them to go towards Krishna, help create the life journey in an auspicious way right from the beginning. Now, Abhayam, what is Abhayam? Abhayam is fearlessness. So fearlessness is, as we discussed earlier, that fearlessness doesn't come by the absence of fear, it comes by the presence of a cause that dwarfs fear. Now, when we understand that there is a reality, there is a purpose that is so fulfilling, that is so consuming, that is so deep, that fear becomes insignificant in front of it. So that's how fearlessness comes. And Prabhupada explains, what is that? By the absorption in a cause. Now, how do we absorb ourselves in a cause? Different people can have different causes. Now, a patriot may, because of love for the nation and the desire for and because of attraction to the cause of protection of the nation, may overcome the natural normal fear of bodily injury and willingly go to fight a war. That's possible in some cases, but that is not the highest cause. The highest cause is cause of pure devotion to Krishna, because that alone leads to eternal benefits for ourselves and for others. And in that, that fearlessness that a devotee has comes from the awareness of a presence that dwarfs fear. That awareness of a presence that dwarfs fear is the awareness of Krishna. The more we become aware of the presence of Krishna, the super soul in the heart, the more we will be able to be fearless, knowing that Krishna is always there with me and Krishna will protect me. When Krishna is there and I am serving Krishna, whatever happens will be for my good and Krishna will offer me all protection. So now Prabhupada explained that these godly qualities, among them, Abhayam comes by awareness of Krishna as indwelling presence. And because Krishna is greater than the greatest, so no problem can be bigger than Krishna. And that's why by remembering Krishna, we can become fearless. As it is said, you know, don't tell Krishna how big your problems are. Tell your problems how big Krishna is. So all problems are fears. When you remember how big Krishna is, then the problems become dwarfed. So we have to remember Krishna that way. And Abhayam. Now Prabhupada explained that the various qualities are there. They are as per the different varnas. So Abhayam, of course, now all godly people have to have these qualities in general. But certain qualities are important for certain varnas. And Prabhupada explained that systematically into the purport. So abhayam especially is a quality of the quality that is to be cultivated by sannyasis. Sannyasis generally in this world we get security by having people around us. You know, if something happens to me, others are there, they'll take care of me. But sannyasi has to leave everyone and travel alone. So that was the tradition, that sannyasi would travel alone through the jungles. So for that abhayam, sannyasi requires to be fearless. And that fearlessness comes by taking shelter of Krishna, by remembering Krishna's presence internally and taking shelter of Krishna. So that is a quality especially important for sannyasis. And abhayam, sattva samshuddhi, jnana yoga vyavasthiti. So sattva samshuddhi. Sattva samshuddhi is, samshuddhi is purification. Sattva is existence. So purification of one's existence. Purification. Purification means what? Now there are many impurities that are there. So Srila Prabhupada focuses on the impurity of lust. So how do we free ourselves from lust? By avoiding external and internal triggers. External triggers are the association of the opposite sex, and internal triggers are recollections of past indulgences, or recollections of memories of sensual pleasures. So that's why sannyasis are not meant to associate with women closely. And Srila Prabhupada gives the example of how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so strict that even his female disciples would offer obeisances to him from a distance. So the idea is that one has to focus on purification. So purification of existence, sattva samshuddhi. And when we focus on purification by following certain rules and regulations, the point here is not misogyny, it's not hatred of women or something like that. The focus is on one's purification. So now in the Vedic culture, the brahmacharis are told not to have eye contact with women. Now of course the reason for this is sometimes the women may find this very very disturbing, very irritating. You're talking with somebody and you don't even look at that person. That might appear very it might appear offending also. It might appear dehumanizing. But that was the standard, and the purpose of the standard was not to dehumanize at all. It was to re-spiritualize. The idea, the reason for this particular injunction is that actually there has to be those who are in the renounced order, they are not meant to derive pleasure through sensuality. And when a soul is in the male body, the male body and the male eyes get pleasure in looking at the female forms, and especially looking at the female face and the female eyes. And this is by minimizing eye contact, the idea is not to disrespect women, but it is, the idea is to help one to have a spiritual vision, not by looking, but by even if there is some necessary service required, by having focus on the service without necessarily the eye contact. Now of course, because we have the modern society, and we have women who also have been brought up in a different set of values. To avoid offending women, sometimes some renunciates, brahmacharis, sannyasis may also have eye contact, and that is a matter of courtesy which they may do it. So either way, some renunciates may avoid eye contact, some renunciates may have eye contact. But the important point is that we recognize that it is not that when eye contact is avoided, it is not a matter meant to disrespect. It's simply a matter of maintaining the purity and purification of existence. It's actually admission of humility and weakness, that you know I am not pure hearted, and there may be contamination that may be resulting, and that's why to avoid that contamination, I'm avoiding eye contact. But then whatever service is to be done, that say answering questions or whatever is to be done, that the sannyasis are ready to do that. So either way, the point is, beyond the specifics, there is a general point that sannyasis are meant to focus on purification of existence. And that should not be, that focus of purification of existence should not be misinterpreted or misrepresented as antipathy towards any particular gender or anything like that. So we should look at, let's look at Srila Prabhupada's purport. So Prabhupada talks about Abhayam Sattva Samshuddhi, and then he talks about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then Jnana Yoga Vyavasthiti. Jnana Yoga Vyavasthiti, cultivation of knowledge. And in the cultivation of knowledge, so Prabhupada writes, sannyasi life is meant for distributing knowledge to the householders and others who have forgotten their real life of spiritual advancement. Their real life of spiritual advancement. So what happens in material life is that material life is endlessly entangling. It is not just entangling, but endlessly entangling. You know, one thing, second thing, third thing, fourth thing keeps coming. And then there are loose ends. Loose ends means, okay, this has to be fixed up, this has to be fixed up, this has to be fixed up. But what happens is the loose ends never end. And I fix up one thing and then 10 other things become unfixed. And I fix those things and then 10 other things become unfixed. And it just goes on and on and on. Now, we are not meant to neglect material life, but nor are we meant to neglect spiritual life. So, regular contact with renunciates, those renunciates, especially those renunciates who are completely devoted themselves to pursuit of transcendence, to Krishna's service, that reminds those who are in the householder life, okay, this is an important part of life and I have to focus on this also. So if sannyasis are focusing exclusively or primarily on this, entirely on this, then at least I have to devote some time for this. So that's how there is a reciprocation. And sannyasis are also traditionally meant to beg. So the begging is not because they are beggars primarily. The begging is a means by which they express their humility. And the begging is also a means by which they can get an opportunity to interact with the householders and give them some transcendental knowledge. So, Jnana Yoga Vyavasthitihi. And then Prabhupada writes that in case one has taken renunciation but doesn't have knowledge, then one should cultivate knowledge. And then one can share that knowledge with others. But either way, it is important to share knowledge. Then, Dhanam Damascha Yajnascha Swadhyayastha Parjavam. So, Dhanam Damascha Yajnascha. Dhan is charity. Charity is a very important part of spiritual life, especially as the householders. And in the important point about charity is to recognize that charity is not just activity. Charity should not just be an activity, charity should be a mentality. And mentality is developed through the cultivation of a habit. So that means that the idea behind charity is not to just give some charity. Yes, that is important to give some charity, but the idea is that to develop the mentality of giving. That to develop the mentality of a giving, and that's why we give regularly. Some people feel, okay, now I am in a financial crunch, so now I won't give anything. In the future, when I earn money, then I will give a huge sum. Yes, if we have money and we can give a large sum, that is good. But the important point is not the quantity of the sum, but the regularity. Why? Because that creates the mentality of giving. Yes, I have to give regularly. And in a small amount or big amount, of course, we should try to give as much as possible to Krishna. But the important point is give regularly, because that's a habit to be cultivated. That's why Krishna clarifies charity. And we put charity as an activity, and we will consider charitable disposition as a quality. But Krishna is calling charity itself as a part of the godly nature, or the divine nature. The grihas, the householders who have divine nature, they are charitably disposed. But charity is their quality. So, charity as a quality helps us to develop the giving mentality. And then, when we have, if we don't develop that habit of giving, then we may eventually have a lot also. But then, because the habit of giving is not there, so when we have a lot, then the mind comes up with a lot of demands also. Oh, I have to get this also, I have to get this also, I have to get this also. And then people who postpone giving charity so that they can give a lump sum in the future often don't give anything at all. Because the idea is that the habit has not been developed, the habit of holding on to the money has been developed, and that habit continues even when a person doesn't have, person can spare money to give charity. That's why charity should be focused on as a charity done as a habit. And then danam damascha yagyascha. Damas is sense control. Damascha yagyascha. So sense control refers to the capacity. Now sense control is required for everyone, and it is also required for householders. The idea is that even in household life, the purpose of marriage is not just an arrangement for sense gratification. It is for helping both of them to together move on towards Krishna. So, you know, sexuality is a part of life. Sexuality is a part of our humanity itself. You know, as human beings, as embodied creatures, sexuality is a part. But sexuality is one thing and sexualization is another thing. Sexualization means that we reduce everything to sexual terms only. So the marriage relationship should not be reduced to sexualization. It's not just an arrangement for sexual gratification. It's actually an arrangement for spiritual elevation. And over a period of time, the husband and wife, they come to a level, if they practically practicing spiritual life seriously, you know, they start seeing each other not so much as males and females who will provide each other mutual gratification, but they start seeing each other spiritually as partners in a spiritual journey, as fellow souls, fellow devotees who are moving forward in the spiritual journey. To develop that sort of equation requires self-control. Danam damascha yagyascha. Yagya is sacrifice. So there are now abhayam sattva samshuddhi jnana yoga vyavasthiti was for the sannyasis. Then danam damascha yagyascha, these are for the grihasthas. So damascha yagyascha, yagya is sacrifice. Of course, the Prabhupada mentions that there are various kinds of sacrifices. There are yagyas, various yagyas which the grihasthas would do in Vedic culture. But now the primary yagya is the yagya of chanting the holy name. That is meant for everyone. Even the grihasthas do it, and then that's how they fulfill the obligation that are expected in householder life. And swadhyaya staparjavam. So swadhyaya. Swadhyaya is self-study. So Prabhupada explains swadhyaya is especially meant for brahmacharya. A brahmacharya is student life. And students, the very word student is associated with the word study. So swadhyaya, so they are meant to study. So by studying the Vedic literature in student life, then the person develops a deep understanding of scripture. And by developing the deep understanding of scripture, eventually, even if the brahmachari becomes a grihastha, the person will not get entangled in material life. The person will recognize that actually the purpose of life is not just material enjoyment, it is spiritual fulfillment. And even grihastha ashram will be a way towards that. So the purpose of scriptural study is to help one understand this. So swadhyaya, of course, now I mentioned earlier that this is to be done for everyone. All these godly qualities, the divine qualities, are meant to be developed by everyone. But while developing all these qualities, in certain ashrams, certain varanas, certain ashrams, certain qualities are specifically emphasized. They are especially required. And that's what is talked about over here. So everybody has to do swadhyaya, but brahmacharya life is focused on swadhyaya. Swadhyaya stapa archavam. So tapa, austerity, is also required for everyone, but Prabhupada explains that this is especially for the retired, vanaprastha. You know, when a person is living as a grihastha, there are relative comforts of householder life. And when a person takes vanaprastha, at that time, things are a little difficult. But the focus is on the accepting the austerity so that one can effectively practice spiritual life. Now, how varanashram is going to be implemented in today's age is difficult to say. So the important point is that we understand the principles and we develop the quality so that we can practice spiritual life. Now, in today's society, often brahmacharis, they also act as preachers. So actually, primarily brahmacharis are, in the traditional Vedic culture, brahmacharis are students, brahmacharis are servants, and then they assist the sannyasis. Of course, those brahmacharis, they start their brahmacharya at the age of 5 and they may continue to at the age of 25. Today, the whole varanashram is such that people at the age of 25 become brahmacharis after doing their education, material life, and then they become brahmacharis. So we can't replicate the ideal Vedic system right in today's culture. So the important point is we understand the broad social roles and see how we can incorporate and integrate those into our lives according to our time, place, circumstance. Now going forward with respect to Vanaprastha, you know, Vanaprastha is almost like a extinct species today. There are sannyasis within ISKCON, and there are of course many there's a good number of devotees who, after doing their family obligations, after creating some financial security, would like to focus more on serving Krishna wholeheartedly. So then they may or may not, Prabhupada did not recommend devotees going to jungle. That's not practical in Kali Yuga. Vanaprastha is one who goes to jungle. But the idea is not just to go to a jungle. The idea is to go to a jungle to meet saintly people. So in Kali Yuga, there are very few jungles only left. And even if you go to jungles, there are not many saintly people left over there in the jungles. And even if there are saintly people, there are very few people who are ready to go to the jungle to meet the saintly people. And so saintly people also live in the temples. And even if it is not possible for a person to entirely leave householder life, but a person can minimize the worldly engagements and increase spiritual engagements. That is tapa. Tapa is austerity. So accepting voluntary discomfort for a higher cause, that is austerity. And we may have to see when and how we can increase our focus on spiritual life, and that will vary according to time, place, circumstance, no doubt. But the idea should be a devotee wants to, over a period of time, increase one's spiritual commitments, one's spiritual involvement, and thereby prepare for the final exam of death and prepare for the ultimate successful life of returning back to Krishna. So Prabhupada emphasizes that the entire Varnashram system is meant for tapasya. Without tapasya or austerity, no human being can get liberation. So why? Because actually when we are sick, we have to take a treatment, and the treatment involves following certain processes, not all of which are likable to us. So we have to be ready to do what is not likable to us also, so that we can make steady spiritual advancement. Then Prabhupada goes on and talks about the qualities in terms of the varna. So first was sannyasi, brahmachari, grahastha, and vanaprastha. Now it is Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. So arjavam. So the list of the qualities is going on now. Let's look back at the list once again. So we have discussed till now swadhyaya tapa. So now we are coming to arjavam. Arjavam is truthfulness. So of course everybody is recommended to be truthful, but the Brahmana is meant to be truthful, and the Brahmana is especially meant to speak the absolute truth. Now many of these qualities that are described over here, they primarily apply to Brahmanas. So like that, there are qualities for everyone. So ahimsa. Now ahimsa is not a primary quality for a Kshatriya. It's quality for a Brahmana. Brahmana is meant to be forgiving. You know, it is described in the Ramayana that when Vishwamitra, when he was earlier a king, Kaushik, he tried taking away the Surabhi cow of Valmiki. So Valmiki did not protest, because a Brahmana is meant to be non-violent. A Brahmana depends on a Kshatriya for protection. Brahmana doesn't take arms oneself. Of course, in extreme situations, not for the sake of self-defense, but for the sake of the general welfare of others, a Brahmana may resort to strong means. That's like when King Vena was committing atrocities and disrupting not just the social order, but also the spiritual order, was preventing people from practicing spiritual life. So at that time, what did he do? And the Brahmanas gave him good instruction. When he was defiant and he condemned the Brahmanas themselves, and the Brahmanas took strong action. At that time, the Brahmanas by speaking, by hunkar, they reduced him to ashes. So that is extreme. But generally, the Brahmanas are meant to cultivate ahimsa. So ahimsa, satyam, akrodhas. So like that, all these qualities are described. So Arjavam is straightforwardness, Satyam is truthfulness. The two are related, but there is a slight difference between them in terms of emphasis. So, Akrodhas is not getting angry. Ahimsa, Satyam, Akrodhas. So, we discussed about Ahimsa. Prabhupada, again and again, Prabhupada is talking about Ahimsa earlier also in terms of while talking about 13th chapter also, he says Ahimsa means not to kill animals, and not to real Ahimsa means not checking one's progressive life, anyone's progressive life. So we discuss this, how one should help everyone to advance. So the animals are also in their own way moving forward, and one should not cause violence to them. Satyam. So Prabhupada translates Arjavam as straightforwardness. Satyam means one should not disturb the truth for some personal interest. And Prabhupada talks about misinterpretation of scriptures. Then Akrodha. Akrodha means even if there is provocation, one should be tolerant. For one becomes angry, the whole body becomes polluted. Now it's interesting, Prabhupada is using the word body becomes polluted. Now normally you would think of the anarthas as polluting the mind. How do they pollute the body? Actually, the anarthas, certainly they pollute the mind. Lustrous lust pollutes the mind. Greed pollutes the mind. Anger pollutes the mind. But then, whatever happens in the mind also affects the body. Now, when we become angry, we become also physically disturbed by it. You know, maybe we start breathing fast, we start sweating, we start clenching our fists, grinding our teeth. And all these are rajasic and tamasic behavior characteristics. And they are undesirable at the physical level. So they come, they contaminate the body. And how does one tolerate anger? By remembering that there is a higher purpose to life. Now, small things, the provocation will always keep coming. So as Prabhupada tells in the Krishna book, one's greatness has to be estimated by one's ability to tolerate provoking situations. So when there is reason to become angry but we stay calm, then that is tolerance. And that is also akrodham. So, not becoming angry. And then apaishunam is very important. Apaishunam is, Prabhupada translated very beautifully as aversion to fault finding. Aversion to fault finding. Generally, you know, what is gossip all about? Gossip basically means, you know, we talk about the faults of others. The devotees delight in the glories of Krishna and the glories of devotees. But gossipers delight in the faults of others. Gossipers delight in the faults of others. They delight in how this person has this fault, this person has this fault, and they spread the faults. So this is very distasteful for a cultured person. And for a person who is godly minded, aversion to fault findings. And even if we have to speak about faults of others, actually the only time when we can speak about the faults of others is when we get no joy in doing so. When we get no joy in doing so. So as a matter of necessity, for benefiting others or for protecting others, we may sometimes have to speak the faults of others. But we don't get any joy in it. Our joy comes, we are meant to laugh with others, not laugh at others. As devotees, we are meant to laugh with others. Laugh with others means not that if people are engaging in ignorant enjoyment, we go descend to their level and we enjoy at that level. No. We are meant to, we are relishing life at a spiritual level, and we want to elevate others also to the spiritual level. And there, we all delight, we all relish. So we want to laugh with others. Our goal ultimately is to elevate others. Sometimes as devotees, you know, we get a joy in condemning the karmis. You know, those karmis, they're so foolish. They do like this, they do like that, they do like that, they do like that. Now, even if we want to talk about the folly and the fallacies of materialism, we can do that. But that should not lead to hatred or derision towards the materialistic people. No, actually, if at all we should have compassion, we should have affection in terms of seeing them as parts of Krishna, and we try to help them in whatever way we can. So whether it is, certainly finding faults with devotees can be offensive, and finding faults even with materialistic people. Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about one of the offenses being criticism of general living entities. We don't want to criticize general living entities also unnecessarily. So apaishunam. Apaishunam is an aversion to fault finding. And then in this way, when one develops apaishunam, then one can actually develop very deep relationships. The characteristic of advanced devotee described in the Rupa Goswami is also that nindadi shunya hridayam, that doesn't have the inclination to criticize anyone, because the devotee is sees everyone's spiritual potential and wants to help everyone's spiritual potential be developed. Now we see this in Ramanacharya when he saw this young man who was completely infatuated with the woman. What did he do? He did not. Everybody was mocking this. Now there's the Lord's procession going on, and you are just foolishly captivated with the woman. But what did Ramacharya? He did not laugh at him. He had compassion for him. Rather than finding fault with him, he asked him, "Now, why is it that? What do you find so attractive?" He says, "This woman's eyes are so attractive. I never seen such attractive eyes." Ramacharya saw the spiritual potential over there. He says, "Oh, you're attracted to beauty. What if I show you I have eyes which are more beautiful than this?" He says, "Then I will devote myself to those eyes." Then he took him to the temple of Lord Raghunath and showed him this, revealed to him the supreme beauty of the Lord. And he revealed to him the supreme beauty. What happened? The Lord became, he became captivated by that, and he went on to become a great devotee thereafter. So, what aversion to fault finding. The idea is see the spiritual potential in others and help to develop the spiritual potential. Sometimes we may say Prabhupada used fools and rascals so strongly. So Prabhupada was condemned. Yes, Prabhupada, for our the sake of education, he would point out misconceptions that people would have. But if Prabhupada had been a fault finder, and how could he have possibly gone to the hippies, stayed among people who, as we discussed, only regulative principle was to break all the regulative principles, and were doing all kinds of sinful activities. And Prabhupada not only lived among them, not only taught them, but he fed them, he washed their plates, and he served them. How could he have done that if he had just been a fault finder? No, Prabhupada saw the spiritual potential in others and fanned its potential and neglected whatever conditionings they may have had. That is actually compassion. That is godly quality. Apaishunam. And then Prabhupada says re. Re means modesty. So modesty, now the word modesty often is used in terms of dressing. It's used in terms of how we live together. So one should not act in a way that is immodest, that is inappropriate, that is undesirable. Achapalam. Chapalam means chapala means restless, going here, going there. Achapalam means one does not become restless. One stays focused, one stays determined. And tejaha. So now these are all qualities which till now I described. So we won't go into all the qualities, we'll just focus on whatever Prabhupada has described. And the focus is on now tejaha, tejaksham. Teja is strength or effulgence. So the kshatriyas are meant to be assertive. Whatever is required for the service of the Lord, they should do that. Shaucha, Prabhupada discussed shaucha means cleanliness. Na atimanita, adroho na atimanita. Adroho na atimanita. So adroho is non-enviousness. So if others have more wealth than me, others have more power, more prestige than me, then if am I in a particular varana, within the varanashram system, others may have more than me, then I shouldn't become envious of them, because I understand that this is the best way I can become purified. You know, ultimately this world is like a hospital. And in this hospital, the goal is to get cured. You know, if we see that, you know, the doctor is giving me one medicine, the doctor is giving somebody else another medicine. He says, "Why? You know, you are giving me such a bitter medicine and giving that person such a sweet medicine." You know, the point is not bitterness or sweetness, the point is appropriateness. What is required for me? So for a person with the psychophysical nature of say Vaishya or Shudra, that person, by doing the Vaishya Shudra activity, that person will get purified. And by getting purified, the person will become eventually liberated. So that's like getting discharged from the hospital. So we should not focus so much on the specifics, you know, this person has got more, I've got less, this person is doing this, I'm doing that. No, we focus on what is appropriate for us according to psychophysical nature, and by doing that we get elevated. So adroho, don't be envious, and na atimanita, atimanita, one does not demand respect. And as you said that, you know, in spiritual life we can accept respect, but we don't expect respect. Accept means if somebody offers respect, we accept it, because we see that respect as a means for the reciprocation of love and the following of etiquette, reciprocation of affection, the following of etiquette. So we fold hands, we offer obeisances, all this is a part of Vaishnava etiquette, and we do that. But the important point in doing all this is to recognize that this respect is not just being offered to me, I am representing Krishna, and respect is being offered ultimately to Krishna. So I should also offer respect to Krishna who is present in the heart of this person. So generally when we get praise, you know, praise should deflate the mind, it shouldn't inflate the ego. What does that mean? Generally praise can inflate the ego. If somebody praises me, oh I am so great, I have so much talent, I have this, I have that, I have that. So when other devotees praise us, we may think, I am such a great person, I am such a great devotee. It can inflate our ego. But rather, a serious devotee can use praise to deflate the mind. Deflate the mind. Suppose we give a good class and then others come and appreciate. Oh, you gave such a nice class, you told such wonderful philosophy, you have helped me, you have brought me out of ignorance, you have inspired me in devotional service. So we may feel, we can become proud of this, or can let it inflate our ego, or otherwise we can think, actually I am so unworthy. Now I know how much impurities I have in my heart, and still Krishna is using me also. Krishna is using me to serve Krishna, serve Him, to serve His mission by letting my message be broadcast, letting His message be broadcast even through me. So Krishna is so great that He can use even an unworthy instrument like me. So if Krishna is using me as an instrument, then to do good to others, then why should I be an obstruction? Why should I be an obstacle? Let me try to be as less resistant as possible to Krishna's mercy going through me. And the frivolousness of our mind is what? Frivolousness of the mind, you know, I'll enjoy this, I'll do that. You know, we in every moment, we can be doing so much good to others. We can be doing so much good to others by sharing Krishna's message, by connecting others to Krishna. Every moment we can do so much for Krishna and help others come close to Krishna. So the mind has its own frivolous engagements. You know, I just waste time here, gossip over there, chit chat over there, all those things. But if you remember the gravity and the glory of the mission that we have, then we won't let ourselves become affected by frivolousness. What we will do is we'll recognize the seriousness of what we are doing, and we'll be inspired to devote ourselves to doing things seriously. You know, each of us, we are not just a practitioner of devotional service, but we are also become a representative of devotional service. We become a representative of Krishna, and Krishna is supreme doctor, and we become assistant doctors. Even if we know very little, still we can give the medicine to others. So now imagine that if a doctor is in a hospital ward, and the doctor is meant to attend to the patients and treat the patients who are in pain. Now, if while in the hospital ward, the doctor starts flirting with a nurse, you know, and the patient is crying and dying in pain, that is so terrible. So like that, you know, we have a serious mission, and if others appreciate us, others praise us, they tell us, you know, oh, you are helping me so much in my spiritual life, this and that. And that should remind us that I have such a serious mission over here. And when I have a serious mission, I should not let my mind be caught in frivolousness. So the frivolousness of the mind is very inappropriate when we come understand the gravity of the mission that we have been entrusted. So when others praise us, we can let that praise remind us of the gravity of the mission, and thereby deflate the mind, free the mind from its frivolousness. So in this way, whenever mana comes, we can accept it but not get intoxicated by it. And then Prabhupada explains that according to Varnashram, we cultivate them, these qualities. Now let's move forward to the next verse. So dambhodarpo abhimanascha krodha parushyam evacha ajnanam cha abhijatasya partha sampadam asurim. So sampadama asurim, this is the demoniac nature, the demoniac qualities. So the qualities that comprise the demoniac nature. So what are these qualities? Dambho darpo abhimanascha, pride, arrogance, conceit. So they seem similar, and they are in many ways similar, but there are slight differences of degrees. In it's like there is egoist and there is egotist. Egoist is a person who thinks that I am a great person, who thinks, has a big ego. But egotist is a person who talks about himself, oneself constantly. That's, you know, and yet we start talking something, anything, you know, yesterday I had gone to this place and I saw this. Oh, you know, 3 years ago I had gone to similar place. And you know what happened at that time? And the person, so everything the person hears, the person becomes, is an autobiographical hearer. That means, whatever the person hears, that becomes a stimulus for rewinding the autobiography of that person. And that can be very irritating. So that is egotist. So, the ego is the center, but in one case, one is just thinking about oneself. The other case, one is talking about oneself. So, dambha, darpa and abhimana. So, dambha is where one wants to... we discuss, you know, adamanitvam, adambhitvam. Dambha means where one doesn't have good qualities, still one wants to parade that I have good qualities. And one wants credit for that. Darpa refers to where one may have good qualities, one wants to parade one's qualities. And abhimana refers to where one wants man. As we discussed earlier, we discussed earlier difference between stuti and man. Stuti means that others praise, and man means we feel honor. So there are correlation, but the focus is different. Dambho darpo abhimanascha. So abhiman is where one is hungry for man. So one delights and resides and lives in man only. Without man, a person cannot live. That's why in the past, the kings would have bards. You know, bards are those who are actually, their only job is to glorify the king. So of course, if the king is a devotee, then the glory of the king is also connected to the glory of Krishna. That's different. But there are people like that. You just glorify the person, bards. So, abhimanascha, krodha parushyam evacha. So, krodha and parushyam seem similar. Krodha is anger, and parushya is anger as expressed through speech. That is harshness. So, insensitive, hurting, sarcastic speech. That is parushyam. Parushyam. So how does the parushya? So you know, we will mardam rirachapalam. Mardavam was gentleness. So the characteristic of a godly person is sensitive, gentle speech. So mardavam. So we see that, you know, people often taunt, especially materialistic people, they taunt others and they use ugly words, using swear words, using foul words is so common among materialistic people, among godless people. And sometimes people, the more nasty the swear words they use, they think it is, they think that is good, that is cool. Actually, that is not cool. That is a sign of a fool. So, you know, the way we speak, that is the way we think. And that is the way our whole culture gets shaped and affected. So, parushyam, harshness. So, harsh speech is a characteristic of agyanam cha abhijatasya. So we discuss jnana yoga vivasthiti and svadhyaya in the qualities of the devta, of the godly, divine. So they either have knowledge or they're cultivating knowledge through study. But agyana, the ungodly, the demoniac, they focus only on, if at all they have any jnana, that is just material knowledge. And they actually completely neglect spiritual life and spiritual knowledge. And in that way, they stay in darkness about spiritual life. That is their misfortune. So we will discuss about the demoniac more later. So Prabhupada writes in this verse, the royal road to hell is described. It's quite graphic language, the royal road to hell. Why the royal road to hell? Generally, the royal road is something which is celebrated and glorified. So, the demoniac go proudly on this load. That means the demoniac are proud of being harsh. They are proud of being arrogant. They are being proud of all these things. So, that is very unfortunate. The royal road to hell is described. So, now, Daivi Sampad Vimokshaya Nibandhaya suri mataha maashucha sampadam daivim abhijato si pandava. So now at this point when Arjuna hears, now Arjuna is hearing everything quite seriously. Arjuna is thinking, how does it apply to me? You know, when we go to a doctor and the doctor describes certain things about a disease, and we are naturally hearing with concern. But are these characteristics, are these symptoms, are this relevant to me? How does it apply to me? So Arjuna starts thinking that I am a Kshatriya, that I do violence. And in the Kshatriyas, before they fight, they goad each other. They goad each other to fight. And that's actually one of the joys of the martial spirit. You want to bring out the best from the other, best in terms of fighting expertise and skill. So the person should have that fighting spirit. And to go, that person is often goaded. So sometimes the Kshatriyas also speak harshly to each other. So he's thinking that I'm going to fight a war and I'll speak harshly. So I'm looking for a kingdom. So am I having demonic qualities? So Krishna says, no. First he mentions that Daivi Sampad Vimokshaya. So if one lives according to the divine nature, that will lead to liberation. If one lives according to demonic nature, that will lead to bondage. Nibandhaya Surimata. Then Arjuna thinks, am I going to stay in bondage? But I want to live to become liberated. Arjuna says, don't worry. Krishna says, don't worry, because Ma Shucha Sampadam Daivim Abhijato Si Pandava. O Pandava, O Arjuna, your Sampada is Daivi. How is your Sampada Daivi? Because for a Kshatriya to fight in Dharma Yuddha is not demoniac. Actually, it is divine. It is essential. Otherwise, how will order be maintained? Krishna says that he himself comes and to re-establish dharma, he has to do violence. Vinashaya dushkritam. So violence in and of itself is not bad. Violence when it is unwarranted, that is bad. But when for a dharma yuddha violence is required, then that is not bad. So, maashucha sampadam daivim. Arjuna, do not fear. Maashucha's phrase will come later in the 18th chapter also. Maashucha, do not fear, do not lament. Your characteristic is divine, so do not lament. Then Krishna describes further, Dvau bhuta sargau lokesmin daiva asurevacha daivo vistarashah prokta asuram parthame shrunu. So, Dvau bhuta sargau lokesmin. So he says, in this world there are two kinds of people. There are daivi and asuri. And daivo vistarashah prokta asuram parthame shrunu. So, I have described in detail the divine nature to you and asuram partha. So now I will describe to you the demoniac nature. Now we wonder, where has Krishna described the daivi qualities in detail? He has just described in 3 verses. And if you look from this chapter's point of view, from the verse 7 to practically the end of the chapter till verse 20, at least 1920, there is a description of the demoniac nature only. So then, as compared to that, the length over which demoniac nature is described, the divine is very short. So why is Krishna using the word vistarashaha? Daivo vistarashaha prokta. I have described in detail. So that detail doesn't refer to only what is described in the 16th chapter. Krishna has described the godly qualities many times. In the 2nd chapter, he has described it in the characters of Sita Pragya from 2.54 to 72. In the 3rd chapter, he is also described when he is talking about kings like Janaka and others who live in detachment. In the 4th chapter also, he is described from 4.19 to 23. He is talking about the karma, Nishkam Karma Yogi. Then again in the, he is described a few verses in the 5th, 6th chapters also. And then especially in the 10th chapter, he has described the godly qualities, which come from Krishna. Then in the 12th chapter especially, he has described the qualities of the devotees from 12.13 to 20. In the 13th chapter, he has described the characteristics of those in knowledge as 13.8 to 12. So like that. And 14th chapter also, Krishna has described the characteristics of those who are in goodness and also those who are transcended the more. So all these are description of those with qualities. So Krishna is saying that I have described it elaborately in the previous chapters also. But now, asuram parthameshuno. So, I said, now I will describe to you the demoniac qualities. And that description we will look at in our next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.